Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Nuchtigal.
And I'm Donna Priskindus.
We gather here once a week at the beautiful station and beautiful studios of KHOI Community Radio in downtown Ames. Welcome to our table. We get by with a little help from our friends.
Oh, yes. The Donalana Kitchen Show is sponsored in part by Practical Farmers of Iowa, a member-based, farmer-led nonprofit organization that has been strengthening farms and communities through farmer-led investigations and information sharing since 1985. You can find out more at their website, www.practicalfarmers.org, and they have a lot of good field days going on right now in the summer.
They do. Get to know your farmer. Get to know where food is coming from. It doesn't just, well.
And how it gets made.
Right. I was going to say food just doesn't fall off of trees, but yes, it does.
Well, so, you still have to pick it up and get it to the table, you know.
And lots of other stuff, too. This is the Donalana Kitchen. We talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. We do. We kind of cover the
gamut. We're a little bit of an opinionated group here.
Mm-hmm. We are. That's why we have each other. Yeah. Today on the Donalana Kitchen, we're going to celebrate food in the way that Central Iowa and Ames in particular has decided to do it this season. There's going to be a farm-to-table celebration on Main Street, and we're going to talk to the chef who is kind of putting this all together, along with the great people at the Ames Main Street Farmers Market. Well, that comes up a little later. Well, also, we'll talk about what's ripe and ready in the garden, and a few thoughts about a seasonal garden pest. The first thing I would like to mention is naked ladies, Donna, naked ladies.
Oh, naked ladies. Oh, my, oh, my.
Now, see, we do cover the gamut here. Every year about this time, I'm looking in my garden, actually kind of off my deck, and there are these lovely lilies that pop up, and they are called naked ladies.
And they don't have leaves. It's like this stalk, and what are they, about 24 inches high? And then this trumpet of beautiful pink, and they come in clumps.
In clumps. Actually, they do have leaves, but the leaves come like very first thing in the spring. It's amazing. This little clump of little bitty leaves in
okay,
the
well,
spring.
Okay, well, what I want to know is how do they get there?
How did they get there?
Did you plant them?
I don't remember planting them.
No, I think they volunteer somehow. I used to have them in California.
Yeah.
So they grow in a lot of different places.
Yeah.
But they just kind of, it's like the orange lilies that we have all over town. I had a volunteer group that started out by my driveway, and I just left them. And now they look like I've landscaped the whole thing. So the pink ladies, I think they just come, but I don't know how.
Well, I don't either, but you got to.
Do they move around in your garden?
No, they're always
in the same place.
So I don't know.
Sorry, folks, we should have researched this a little bit. I am very curious about that. I just assumed Lana would know the answer.
Nah, I don't know everything, Donna.
Oh, well, okay, sorry.
Yeah. Anyway, naked ladies. And they come and go rather quickly, and they are a pleasure this time of year.
Yeah, they are. They just kind of, all of a sudden, and they make this beautiful spot in the garden wherever they do. Well, I'm going to have to figure out how they travel because I would like to get some in my garden.
Yeah, you could probably, I could probably break apart. I'm sure they grow from lily sort of like corms on underneath.
Well, I don't know. Yeah. Do you know how like right now in all the ditches, the orange lilies are just all over Iowa. How do they get there?
Well, actually,
it's a mystery.
Flowers do set seed and can get carried by birds.
Okay, yeah, so it must be getting carried.
But lilies in that family are easy to break, go down and get the roots, the corms, the base of it, and spread them out.
All right.
Yes.
So, all right. I want some of those. The other thing I'm looking to collect is I'm determined. Do you know when the Queen Anne's lace sets seed? I want to get some and sprinkle it in my garden. Pretty soon, right? In the early fall?
It's just flowering now.
Yeah, it's really pretty. And I would love to have it
floating all over my garden.
That would
be pretty. Pretty thing. I'll, and that I don't know.
The naked ladies, the Queen Anne's lace. Ta-da, ta-da.
Isn't summer just the best thing in the world?
And they would all be free and local and
Speaking of local, Donna. You said you found some good melons and some other stuff.
The farmer's market. Oh, yes. It is the season, so we're having really good fun. My favorite item at the farmer's market this week, and I told you who the farmer was. Who was it?
You said it was Red Granite Farm.
I think so. They're kind of like right in the middle of the farmer's market, and they have lots of melons and onions, and I think I got eggplant from them, too. But they have. I think they're calling it a breakfast melon or maybe even had a varietal name. It's a tiny, you know, like 6-inch one. Some people call them individual melons, but you can really serve two people with them. And I love this melon. I got so excited to see them, because they have a butterscotchy flavor. They're orange on the inside. They look kind of like a small cantaloupe, but they are first of all, you pick it up and you smell it and it smells so good. You got to smell the little nubbin end where they've taken it off the vine. They are called the variety. I first had them in France many years ago. They're quite common there. They're called a petit gris, although they look a little different. You know, you're into cantaloupes, which there are 1,000 kinds, and each one is a little bit different. But the flavor with this butterscotchy and this characteristic size, I had had them there. And then later in California, I found them, and they were called Charente. So who knows what they're called, but we've got them here in Ames, and by golly, I'll be eating them as long as they have them. They are just really precious.
Melons, yes. Oh, and you found some black currants.
Oh, yes. The black currants have arrived. So Judy Henry from Berry Patch, which is my best source, her son, Mike, he seems to be an excellent currant picker. Thank goodness somebody can do that. So I bought, she gifted me with a whole tray of them. Ooh. You know, like not just a little box, but the whole tray. And I'll be getting some more today. And you can only have them. It's something you cannot buy in the market, okay?
Except you got it at the market.
Well, No. I mean, like, you can't go to the Hy-Vee and get black currants.
Oh, no. Grocery stores don't have these sort of things.
Can only get them this time of year. So what I did is I just put a little bit of water. I put the whole thing in the pot. There were even some leaves in there, the whole nine yards. I just went, whoop, and put just a tiny bit of water, enough to steam them up and soften them up. And then I turned them off and let them cool down. And then I put them through the food mill. Mm-hmm. And just froze the pulp like that. Ah. So later I can make sorbet or, a little chutney sauce to go on pork. Or, when I get ambitious, I'll make some more jam. I do love it as jam. I just put, you just add a little sugar. Then I do add a little lemon zest and a pinch of salt and a good amount of pepper, and it makes a wonderful jam. It also makes a good cordial.
Black currants.
Nice.
Now there are red currants too.
White currants.
Yes. I somehow the black currants are the best, but red currants are
good. They're our favorite. And I do have a bush in my yard, but it doesn't produce enough to, make a huge, I don't know, I probably got 3 or 4 quarts of pulp out of it. However, the leaves of the black currant plant also have a really delightful flavor. So you can make, 1 year I think we just put them in vodka and let them sit. Or, I remember, I think we talked about it. I steep them in cream and or milk and then made an ice cream out of the black currant leaf. Now, the leaf flavoring is nothing like the black currant. And the good story was I had been fiddling with the leaves because I was introduced to the concept by my Swedish neighbor, Ingrid Anderson. And then I was fortunate enough to make a hallowed pilgrimage to the Stone Barns Blue Hill restaurant. And what was on the menu? Black currant leaf ice cream.
Oh, are you a trendsetter or what?
Well, I won't say they learned it from me, but at least we are We are doing our thing here.
And Stone Barns is where?
Oh, it's in New York, just a couple of hours out of New York.
Huh? So see?
Yes.
See?
And yes.
We're up on things just like they are in the outside
the
big city. Oh,
yes. We're keeping up with them.
Ha! Huh?
Can't pull no wool over our eyes here.
Very good. There's so many good things in the garden. Okra is coming, raspberries, basil.
Lana, you had the most beautiful okra.
Oh, it's just standing
just
up.
Just the perfect little guys.
Oh, yeah. And they're just gorgeous this time of year.
Yeah.
I kind of like picking okra. It's kind of wade in there, and you come out with a whole pail full of good stuff. I do like okra. And more people in central Iowa are
eating okra. Shocker.
Yeah, it's a shocker. See, we can learn new things.
I mean, I love okra, but people, you know, go, oh, it's so slimy.
But that's part of its charms. You have to learn how
Absolutely.
To deal with it.
It's textural.
Right. It's like, oh, you don't like black currants because it stains your teeth. Well, that's just part of it.
I have to say, I did make a mess in the kitchen. Whoa.
See, the mess is part of it. Well, there's many good things in the garden this time of year, but there's also something that I've heard it is the worst in many years, and my farm has many of them.
It's lively.
The Japanese beetle. Oh, my gosh.
They are a lively bunch.
My goodness. And you can kind of...
And they're kind of cute, aren't they?
Well,
that little iridescent, and sometimes they have those little wingy things sticking out. They're green. Yeah.
Well, yeah, they're cute.
And they're a really satisfying size for thumb crunching.
I am glad you said that, Donna.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. It's
Japanese
sport.
Beetle. The scientific name is Pupilia japonica. little suckers.
Are they Japanese? Do they come from?
Well, actually.
What's the deal?
Here it is.
Okay,
yes, it's true. It's true. They are not native to the United States.
Oh, invaders.
They originally were contained or found on one island in Japan. Huh? One island. And there they had natural predators. And besides, they couldn't get across the water. But in 1912, believe it or not.
Oh, they've been with us a while.
They were shipped to the United States inadvertently. Yes, yes.
Yeah.
They came with a shipment of iris bulbs, believe it or not. Huh? There you go. And boy, do they like it here. Actually, it started out on the East Coast, and it has every year it's come closer and closer, and we're getting more and more of them and more. And there are just lots of them. So yes, they are Japanese, but they're
native now.
They're native now, and they're all over the place.
So and, what do you do?
Oh, what do you do? Your idea of squashing them is actually, believe it or not, pretty much the best thing you can do. The life cycle of the Japanese beetle is that they lay eggs in the ground and then over winter, and then these little white grubs that people say, oh, my lawn.
So right now they're making the crop for next year.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
They start, and so they overwinter in lawns and lots of other stuff.
I don't have any lawn left unless they like Creeping Charlie,
so
right?
So if you see all those little white, people don't like them in their lawns either, but then they come out, and their life cycle is not really super long. They only spend 30 to 45 days as an adult, which is fine, and they spend most of their time mating, eating, laying eggs.
Like
and,
every other creature
yeah,
on the
yeah,
planet.
Yeah, that's what
right?
they're doing. But every female will lay as many as 40 to 60 eggs in her lifetime, which is fine and dandy. So just think how many are out there. Now, people have been trying to deal with these things, and they
eat. Oh, yeah,
eat.
You have some caveats here, right?
For one thing, they eat. They eat the leaves of just about everything, tomatoes, peppers, grapes, hops, roses, cherries, beans, strawberries, basil, corn, blackberries. They eat, and lots of trees.
Lots of trees. They're all over my morning glories.
Yep,
actually, I don't have too many in my yard yet. Not wood.
Uh-huh. There you go. So they eat all this stuff while they're busy laying eggs. Okay, so...
And people, they can turn a whole tree into, like, lace work, practically.
Right. So the best thing, really, you can do is grab them and squash them. You do have to get over the ick factor. Yeah, you do.
It's kind of like, okay, it's kind of, maybe I'm creepy, but there's this smush little crack sound when you smash them.
Donna.
You know.
Yeah, that's
it
true.
Is, you know that if you don't get them, they're going to get you, right?
That's true. There is suggestions on grabbing them by the handful and throwing them into a pail of soapy water, but it's hard to get them from your hand into the soapy water.
Often they'll just take flight
flight. They are susceptible to a bacterium called milky spore, but that's kind of hard to sort of follow them around and attach milky spore to them, but people are giving it her. Also, there used to be suggestions that you would put out a trap, a Japanese
lure
trap, because they really are, the pheromones are a big deal to these, they like to smell. However, don't do that. Many of the resources I look at say, if you put out a Japanese beetle trap, you will not only gather Japanese beetles from just around the trap, they'll come for miles.
Right. It'll look satisfying because the trap will be full. But you're probably attracting maybe 5 or 10 times more. So not a good idea.
Not a good idea.
Right.
So I'm kind of waiting for them to kind of get done with their eating, mating, laying eggs cycle. And I'm hoping that'll be done soon, because they really have done a job on my raspberries. They kind of land around on the fruit that's starting, especially on the top of the plant, eating the leaves and the fruit.
Well, do you suppose, like, when we have those really hard winter freezes, does anything kill the eggs that they've laid in the ground? I've had invasions. Once you get an invasion and they've laid, why don't you get one every year?
Well, we shall see. I don't know. Yeah. I don't remember we used to be, things are kind of out of balance. We have bugs that kind of fill niches that we didn't have before. Maybe there's other predators that should be eating these things. Do you have a good recipe for these things? I don't know. Maybe if we could.
Well, there is this, you know, the movement to eat more insects because they're full of protein. I have no idea. Yeah. I don't know. Who knows? We'll do a little more research and get back to you folks about this.
Right. Anyway, simply picking them off is probably the best advice.
Yeah. Now, one thing I have heard, I don't know if this is an old wives' tale, but when I smash them, I have a particular place on my fence that's covered with gorgeous morning glories. So I smash them and leave the dead beetle on the leaves.
That actually,
it's a deterrent.
It's a deterrent.
It's like a warning. Here be danger. Here be dragons.
Oh, good. Here be dead Japanese beetle.
Yeah,
Actually,
right.
I did run across some references to, yes, that does kind
figure
of
figure can't hurt.
To slow them down a little bit. So good luck with your Japanese beetle infestations out there, because I'm sure you have them. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Oh, natural repellents. They don't like catnip. They don't like chives. They don't like garlic. And they don't like tansy, but just about everything else.
Oh, so does that mean if you plant any of those things around something that's susceptible?
Yeah, sort of. Yeah.
Or do you
make
a spray out of that and put it on?
You could try. So a soapy water spray with that sort of stuff.
Oh.
Could help.
Okay.
Could help.
Couldn't hurt.
But I can't spray my
whole
farm.
And you did say that the insecticide, right?
Right.
Should you be inclined to use that sort of thing, also is very detrimental to bees. So
right. Be careful.
Please maybe not. Just live with those beetles.
Be careful. Oh, be careful. Well, the tomatoes are finally coming in. I'm so glad.
Oh, yes. And this report is from our queen of tomatoes.
Oh, tomatoes. I am really surprised at which tomatoes came in first this year. I am being blessed with a whole stash of black crimps. And usually I get not so many of those.
Oh, they're beautiful. And aren't they kind of tricky to raise?
Well, I always thought so because...
So it's a good black crimp season.
There you go. They came early. And also I have a whole bunch of persimmons, a big yellow. And,
oh, yummy.
Yeah, and I thought, well, wait a minute. Why are you early? Oh, my red ones are just starting now. I don't know. You never know. There you go. Tomatoes.
Well, they must have been the tomato fairy seed enhancer in your greenhouse or something like that.
It must be. Yeah. Anyway, we're here to celebrate local today. And here's a local tune. It's by a person named Mike Bell who used to play for the Barn Owl Band. And this, I think I've played this every year because it's just a timely seasonal tune. This is KHOI. This is Taste of Radio for the Heart of Iowa. And this tune is called The First Tomato. Was The First Tomato, a fine polka. I hope you were dancing around the kitchen table with your cat there. I mean, it's a good thing to do this time of day. So we're thinking local, we're thinking food, and it is the season when good stuff is coming from the garden, coming to Main Street this coming Sunday. Main Street in Ames, Iowa, is the first ever farm-to-table dinner. Ah, it's hitting Main Street. And the purpose is to showcase what is grown here. Market vendors from the Ames Main Street Market and the Ames Main Street Market, in cooperation with Aunt Maud's Restaurant, they've been working hard to put this event together. And we talked to Chef Steve Heller about his plans for a great menu.
Okay, we're at Aunt Maud's with Chef Steve, right?
Yes, that is correct.
And Chef Steve has committed to cooking the farm-to-table dinner. I have several questions. I'm envisioning, are we actually lining up a table, a long table down Main Street, and people are sitting like at a communal table?
It's going to be a little bit different than that. We are going to have, I believe, 9 to 10 tables seating, I believe, up to 18 people per table. And they're going to be
long
tables.
Okay.
Yeah, 18, I believe, is the max at each table. And I want to say it's between 9 and 10.
Is it going to be in the street?
It is going to be in the street.
All right. Yes. I like the visuals of this.
Yeah, I think it's going to be great. As long as the weather, you know,
it
works with us, I think everything's going to go great.
Do you have plan B for the weather?
Yes and no. We do.
So they're not going to tent it?
If it's severe weather, they are not going to tent it. If it's sprinkles, we'll still kind of up in the air.
Okay, we'll see.
Exactly.
Okay, so tell me why you decided to do this.
Well, first of all, we're on Main Street, and yep. I'm a big believer of the farmer's market, and I feel like being on Main Street, I should try to be involved as much as I can.
Interesting challenge, isn't it?
It's actually a huge challenge.
Yeah.
And it's a little nerve-wracking a little bit. Everything's going to be cooked in the kitchen here. There's certain things we're going to do family style.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a couple dishes that we are not. You know, as we sat down and try to figure out all the mm-hmm. logistics of everything, mm-hmm. you know, 150 people max, it's a lot of plates, a lot of silverware. And trying to plate 150 things and do it in a manner where it's somewhat all at the same time is almost impossible to do, especially in any size restaurant, especially this size of one. You know, we're a small restaurant with 18 tables, so it's not a very big restaurant. So to do that, you know, we brainstormed and tried to figure out a couple of different ways that we could do it and be successful. And that's what we want to try to do, is be successful as we can, so down the road other restaurants can do this following year and the next year, it's not just Aunt Maud's. Mm-hmm. I would like other restaurants in town to get involved with this. And
maybe each take a course or something, or each take a turn.
You know?
Okay.
Yeah.
That's
you know?
Great. What a great
so if
course.
We can kind of do it and lay the map out, mm-hmm. you know, and see how it works. So August 12th is the date we're doing. It's Sunday night. I would want to say it starts at 6, but I'm not 100% sure on all the particulars yet.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, they have it figured out, but I don't know off the top of my head. But, yeah, so we're doing 4 courses.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole scheme of everything is try to use as many ingredients from the farmer's market as we possibly can in all 4 courses. And I feel like we've done a really good job doing that. And if we're not using something from the farmer's market, it's something that's local in Iowa.
Oh, good for you.
So, and I know there's 2 particular items that I'm using that's not at the farmer's market, but it's locally here.
You know the farmer.
Yeah, Picket Fence Creamery
of
is
course,
one of them.
Of course.
And we've always used their, I think we're probably the first restaurant I think Picket Fence ever started delivering to. Now they've grown and grown, and it's so great for them. But we're using their whipped cream for a honey whipped cream that we're doing for dessert. The other local product that we're using that's not local here, and it's out of Madrid. It's a cheese company, and we're getting some feta and goat cheese from them. Not 100% sure on the name of it in Madrid.
Oh, that's a new one then.
So those 2 companies we're using that aren't at the farmer's market, but everything else is from the farmer's market.
It's wonderful that this is a local dinner, just for people to sit down and think of where the food comes from. And Aunt Maud's has been wonderful in supporting local farmers. Thank you, Steve.
Well, you're very welcome.
Plus, Aunt Maud's is a locally owned restaurant.
It is.
It's not a chain. It is not a franchise. It's a real restaurant.
It's a real restaurant. Yeah. Pat Breen's the owner. He's owned it for, I want to say, 92 or 93.
Long time. For a restaurant, yeah.
Yeah. And he's pretty successful. He's mm-hmm. got a couple other places in town, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So tell us about the menu.
Well, we'll start with the first course.
Okay.
So one of the ways that I wanted to try to use as many different products is I thought by making a gazpacho. Gazpacho is a cold soup, mm-hmm. so it's great to do in an application like this because you can make them up ahead of time and don't have to worry about getting it hot or anything.
Good pick.
Thanks. And the thing about gazpacho is it's got a lot of fresh vegetables, and one of the key ingredients in gazpacho is tomatoes. And everyone knows this time of the year.
That's right.
There's nothing better than tomatoes.
Good idea.
So, you know, from the tomatoes, cucumbers, peppers, onions, I'm spreading the love out and trying to get a little bit from everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the appetizers. The other one is I'm doing the sweet corn salad. It's going to be warm. It's not going to be cold. It's going to be room temp is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a mixture of corn and feta cheese and poblano peppers and onions and cilantro.
Yum.
And, yeah.
So you just serve it on a little plate? Or?
You know, I'm getting these little serving tasting spoons, the little 2-ounce or 3-ounce tasting spoons that stand up, and they're all just going to be in those, and they'll be garnished. And I'm getting some really cool corn shoots, like from Lee Greens. He does, different sprouts and stuff, and he's doing these corn ones for me.
Oh.
And they're so intense in flavor, and they're great, and they're white. And you don't even notice what they are until you eat it. And then you're like, what is that? And it's
like corn flavor.
Super corn flavor. So after the 2 apps, those are going to be out early, so they'll have a time to have their apps while they stand around.
Past hors d'oeuvre.
Yeah, it's going to be on a table.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to have like an app table out there so they can all kind of stand around and converse and get to know each other. And it's kind of the whole aspect of this dinner anyways. People interact with each other. And then we're going to do a salad course, which the salad course will be individually plated for every single person. And we're going to do, I got some local greens from Meow Acres is doing all my salad greens. And then I got some beets and zucchini. And we're making a homemade dressing with honey and goat cheese. And that's where that goat cheese comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Then the honey is coming in play from one of the vendors down there. I have it written down. Busy Bee?
Okay. Yeah, there's a few good honeys
in
the market.
Yeah, so I'm going to get some honey from them. Yeah, So that we will individually plate because we'll be able to do that while they're conversing.
Mm-hmm.
And keep that cold.
You're just going to, like, run it out from the restaurant with a bunch of servers?
Yeah, so it's my understanding they're going to have up to 20 servers, and so we will be able to get all of the 9 to 10 tables, whatever mm-hmm. it is exactly, served pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So then after that, we're going to go into our – I decided to do beef tenderloin. I wanted to do something where I could roast it, and that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to roast them whole.
Oh, the whole tenderloin.
Yeah,
okay,
the whole tenderloin.
And then what
yeah.
are you going to do?
We're going to serve that with a caramelized onion demi-glaze that I'm going to cook down and caramelize with like a potato salad, but a grilled potato salad.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm doing is I'm going to take all these local potatoes, and we're going to blanch them, cut them, and then individually grill each slice of potato.
Wow.
And then, so the thing about this dish, the entree aspect of it, that's going to be served family style. That way I can...
Oh, so the beef will just be lined up on the platters and
yeah.
everybody will...
So that way, you know, if there's 18 tables, I'm doing just 18 platters
okay.
of beef.
Makes sense.
And then we're going to, I believe, have 3 serving sizes of the sweet corn. That's what I'm doing for the veg, is sweet corn from Ray Olson.
Oh, good. And what are you doing with the corn?
I'm just going to sauté it up with a little butter and sage.
Oh, pull it off the cob and...
Yes, it'll
okay.
be all cut off the cob.
Now, let me ask you about the beef. How are you... you're just going to roast it to, like, medium rare and slice it out?
Medium rare, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And,
will it be served room temperature then, kind of?
It'll be served a little bit warmer than that. It's not going to be screaming hot because
yeah.
otherwise it's going to be overcooked.
Exactly.
But it will be all sliced and... a nice mid-rare, maybe a little medium.
And who's, well, actually, if you do the whole thing and you slice it on the platter, people can pick their choice of
they
color.
They can, because the center cuts of it's going to be
a little
less done
pinker.
Than the
yeah.
ends, absolutely.
And whose beef are we having?
We are doing purple ribbon beef, mm-hmm. is what it's called. Yeah, purple ribbon beef. Mm-hmm. I believe they're out of Clarion,
mm-hmm.
Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
I've been working with them for the last couple weeks, and yeah, it's...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's mm-hmm. worked out great, and they're really nice people. And
yum.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's going to be a roast. That way we can just pull it out of my shams, my
mm-hmm.
warming shams, slice them, tray mm-hmm. them up, and I have these big warming shams that I can just put everything in and
mm-hmm.
hold it at the right temperature so it doesn't overcook and it stays hot.
That is a whole art in itself, and,
yeah,
and knowing your equipment.
Yeah, and that's why we chose to do a protein like that,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, doing pork or something and trying to grill it and cooking all these individual pieces or roasting it, you know,
mm-hmm.
I have a little bit more leeway with beef opposed to pork because it's porky. Yeah, it's touchy. I love it, and it's great. But,
well,
I
unless
mean,
you're stewing or something.
Yeah,
or
unless you stew it, absolutely.
Or a pulled pork or a...
Exactly.
Yeah.
But in this application, you know...
No, that sounds very exciting. Steve.
Yeah. So, you know, great. We tried to do beef tenderloin.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's going to be a great dish. So we'll just have sweet corn in serving bowls. We'll have our grilled potato salad in serving bowls. And then we'll have our beef tenderloin sliced and garnished on serving platters.
Oh,
and then
beautiful.
The servers will just bring those out to each table, and that way
mm-hmm.
we can do it quickly and efficiently and, you know, in our heads. That sounds exactly going to work
out.
We
didn't talk about beverages. What's going with it?
The beverages, now, we are not supplying any alcohol whatsoever. They are going to have alcohol, but Aunt Mods isn't doing it. I think Delaviti's doing that aspect of it.
Oh.
Just for...
So people will... Will it come with dinner?
Yes.
Or,
yes,
oh,
that's
so
it. Yeah.
So it's price including alcohol.
Absolutely.
Then.
But I don't know exactly what wines that they're pairing up
okay.
With that. And then obviously we'll have water and stuff out
mm-hmm.
there. But
mm-hmm.
yeah. And then for dessert, we're going to do a pound cake.
Ooh.
And we're just serving it with macerated berries, which I'm getting a bunch of different berries from Lee. And he has
mm-hmm.
a bunch of berries
Lee's
still.
Greens,
yeah.
right?
And, we'll use that whipped cream that I said from
mm-hmm.
Picket Fence.
And how are you flavoring the whipped cream, would you
with
say?
With the honey.
With the honey. Mmm, yum.
The honey whipped cream,
yummy,
yeah.
yummy.
Macerated berries and then the lemon pound cake. And we'll serve that all individual as well.
Oh, plated. Yeah,
plated.
Nice, because it's pretty.
And it's just easier to eat at
yeah.
dessert. You don't want to.
Yeah.
But Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, so that's the
now,
menu.
Do
the
people drink coffee at the end of the meal, or what? Or just more water and wines?
You know what? That hasn't been discussed.
You better ask them.
So we better figure that out.
She should be providing a dessert wine. Well, the menu sounds fabulous.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Beautiful, beautiful. And who's doing the serving?
Volunteers.
Oh, boy.
I'm going to channel my inner waitress. I did ages ago. I did this sort of thing.
Oh, me
I hope
too.
I don't try
me too.
Yeah.
You won't.
I'll try. It'll be good. You have been cooking for Central Iowa and Ames for quite a while. How long have you been doing this, and why do you do this?
Well, I do this because I love it, and I love the challenge, and I love working with all my employees. You know, working in a college town, I get a lot of young men and women coming in.
Yeah, young whippersnappers. Yeah. You got to train them up right.
Exactly. Uh-huh. And it's fun, you know, every 4 years or so, and we get a new group of kids in, you know. A lot of our kids are university kids. Not all of them. Some are high school kids. So it's nice to work with the younger kids and kind of help them develop a working habit, whether it's going to be in this
Absolutely.
Profession or anything else. It's good to help them start with that.
Are you an Ames native?
I am not. I'm originally from Carroll, Iowa. So I'm an Iowa
You're
native.
An Iowa boy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been here since 97.
Right. How did you
My
get started?
I've worked in kitchens.
Yeah, there you go. Me
you know,
too.
Not always a chef. You know, I used to be a dishwasher. Yeah. Still am a dishwasher. We, you know, it never stops. It never stops.
Isn't that the truth?
It's the truth. But, yeah, I mean, this is all I've ever done.
Wonderful.
You know, I think I was 15 when I worked in my first restaurant, washing dishes, bussing tables.
Yep.
Yeah, that's all I've ever done.
I'm glad you do it. And you mentioned picket fence was, you were one of the first people to take a chance on picket fence, and here they are, and they grew. You were one of the first, Matt Waz is one of the first places that took something from Onion Creek Farm and we were getting started, so we got started that
way. Yeah, I've been working with you and Joe for a long time.
And now I know your last name. It's not just Onions for Steve. No, I get it. I actually know. I've always enjoyed coming into a kitchen. I always think of it as it's like backstage at a play. There is just, I know it's hard and awful hard work, but there's a certain fun bit of camaraderie going on back there.
Absolutely there is. I mean, we all get along and we all like to have our fun and we work hard when it needs to be done and we all like to play when we can play. So it's fun.
Great.
You know, and work is easy if it's fun. So hard work, yeah, it's hard, but it's fun work.
Yay. Well, we're going to have a new adventure on, what was the date? The 12th. August 12th. In the middle of Main Street, we will be having dinner.
Yes.
Thank you, Steve, for doing that for all of us.
You're very welcome. We're glad to do it.
That was Chef Steve Heller talking to Donna and I about good stuff coming up, the farm-to-table dinner in Main Street. For more information on that, you can contact the Ames Chamber of Commerce. That event is being sponsored by Ames Main Street Farmers Market and Aunt Maud's. You can go to www.ameschamber.com or call 515-232-2310. Donna, why do people gather and do this sort of, it sounds like
an event. Now, why would I want to sit with a bunch of people I don't know in the middle of Main Street, right?
Yeah.
It is kind of, it's, you think about it that way, but it's really fun. And here's the thing. It stems from old ancient traditions of communities gathering, particularly during harvest season when there is so much good food. And, you know, more and more restaurants are also doing communal tables because sitting with people you don't know can be interesting and fun. And, you know, so that's kind of the root cause of it is, you know, we in our DNA somewhere is that need to socialize communally. And I think it fulfills that. Now, in terms of what the current rage is right now about it is, so about 15 or 20 years ago, it started kind of in several, several farmers in California, mostly in Central and Southern California, started having, they were called outstanding in the field was the final, well, anyway, other people did it. But it was certain farmers who were doing very interesting things, and they would somehow manage to, you would be eating in the field, not in the main street, but mm-hmm. in the field. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And about the same size group, 150 or so. And, you know, you'd see these gorgeous pictures of the long tables with tablecloths all set with the glassware and flowers, and people would show up. Mostly it was city people who wanted to go out in the country for something different. And it was a lovely concept. And, you know, one year you'd see two or three maybe. And then by the next year, they were all over the place. And it developed into a business. There's a guy called Jim Denovan, whom I have met, who is, I don't know, 6'5" or something. He's huge. He's really fun. And he kitted out a big, it's either a truck or a bus or something, so he would actually have a portable kitchen that he could take to the, you know, because really the trick of doing it is the logistics of serving where you don't have a kitchen.
That's no small thing.
No,
to put out
and it's not, you know, and you got to deal with, you know, you got to make sure it's safe and timely and gorgeous. And so he kind of made a business out of this that at first was really just in California. He's, I think, from Santa Cruz, probably. And then it became national. And I know one year, Neil Hamilton had one at his house outside of Des Moines because his wife has amazing gardens and lots of local produce. And, you know, the idea of, you know, picking something, eating outdoors, it's a very attractive proposition, and I'm sure someone will take some interesting pictures of having these tables strewn along Main Street, and it's lots of fun.
Yeah, and this is a community thing. We can actually,
right,
we can get our noses out of the cell phones and kind of enjoy
each
other.
Yes, and it's a fundraiser for the farmers market.
It is.
And apparently the tickets are selling quite well. When I heard about it, I thought, oh, wow, are people in Ames going to go for a, I think it's kind of pricey, like
something like that.
Yeah, to sit on Main Street, you know, even with the traffic closed off.
But it's a fundraiser.
It is, and the tickets are doing very well. And I must say, you know, Main Street is starting this time of year when all the hydrangeas and the planters are in bloom. And, you know, over the past 10 years, a lot of that landscaping that was done on Main Street has grown out, and it's rather attractive.
So let's celebrate this local food thing. That sounds really, really good. The Farm to Table Dinner, co-sponsored by Ames Farmers Ames Main Street Farmers Market and Aunt Maud's, this coming Sunday. This is KHOI 89.1. This is community radio. Find out more about KHOI at khoifm.org. And you can find the Donalana Kitchen pages there, too. It's worth the listen. Yes, it is. Thank you. Welcome back. That was a fine banjo tune played by Merle Hall. Thanks, Merle Hall, another local treasure. The tune is called In the Rain.
Well, speaking of rain, didn't we have another lovely rain last night? I'm just in heaven with the weather. I keep saying to people, you know, who knew? Iowa has the best weather on the planet this year. I mean, fires raging in the Arctic Circle, and several of my friends in California have been evacuated from their homes. The fires are terrible. Europe is having a really unfortunate heat waves, even up as far as Sweden into the Arctic Circle. And, you know, here we are, sitting pretty in Iowa.
Let's enjoy
good
it.
Good rain. Yes. Lovely, lovely temperatures. Oh, my goodness. Yes. I went swimming last night at Peterson's Pit, which I do quite regularly. And oftentimes in August, it's like bathtub temperature. This year, it is perfect. Perfect.
Good.
We are in the best spot right now. Don't you forget that. Who knew? Iowa would be so perfect.
Yeah, it is.
And don't
perfect.
Tell everybody so we no. can... You just told everybody.
Okay.
Hopefully only people in central Iowa are listening, right?
Right.
Okay.
Right. All those people listen to this fine radio station. Oh, summer. And we're talking about community things. You have something going on in your neighborhood. What's going on, Donna?
Oh, I do this thing almost every year. I have this fabulous ice cream maker that you just plug it in and it has its own freezer thing, you know, so you pour the stuff in it, you plug it in, and then boom, in 20 minutes, you have ice cream. So I often have the children in my neighborhood over because I think with ice cream, and when they see it made, rather than, you know, just something you buy at the store, all it is a little thing spinning around and you push the buttons, no big deal, but they really like it. So I have my annual ice cream party. And this year, the major part of the cohort have just finished first grade.
Oh, good.
So, and there's one little particular fellow named Amon, and I always let him take the lead and pick the flavor. So it's been vanilla every year, right? I mean, I do make several flavors because the parents come too. But I said to Amon, what flavor should we make? What's your favorite this year? Chocolate.
Oh, he's growing up.
We have graduated to chocolate. So we will be making, and not only that, his mother said he will probably like a dark chocolate, not this, you know, soppy, super sweet stuff. So we will be having chocolate. And then I think instead of vanilla, since I don't have to make vanilla, what I'm going to do is I'm going to make a vanilla coconut. I hope this works. The Asian store where I've been buying the skate fish also has frozen pouches of coconut milk that taste much better than the canned coconut milk. So I'm going to kind of make a normal vanilla recipe and add the frozen coconut. So we'll have coconut vanilla. And then for the non-dairy option, the peaches are good now. Finally. Oh, I got some Illinois peaches, I think, from the Hy-Vee, freestone ones. So they're really easy to work with. So I think I'm going to take a Reed's ginger beer and mix it with the peaches. So we have peach ginger.
Ooh.
So then we've got the three
flavors.
Oh, you can
flavors. Do that. Add the ginger beer.
Yeah.
Oh, what a good idea.
To get the gingery, you know, the flavor, and then that's some of the sugar, so you don't have adding more sugar than that. So I think I'm going to just puree the peaches really, really well and add the ginger beer and try to get it to the right consistency and throw it in the ice cream maker. So those are the three flavors we'll be having at the Donna's Neighborhood Ice Cream Party.
Oh,
Granny Donna.
Oh, see?
Yep.
See?
Yep.
What a nice thing to do. That peach ginger.
The adults.
But true. But that's not so much ice cream as it would be a sorbet.
Yes.
So
yes.
it wouldn't have.
No dairy in it.
Oh.
It'll be really light and refreshing. And you know, obviously everybody can have all three flavors. They should mix well together, actually.
Oh, that's good.
And we're going to have a treasure hunt.
Uh-huh.
And I think the prize will be, it's a communal treasure hunt, so all the kids will do it in a group. And I think I'll just put some gummy bears as the final prize, you know.
That's a good sort of thing.
It
cleanse your palate.
Well,
with a little bit of gummy bears.
Maybe we'll do pin the tail on the donkey. Huh? I wonder if kids still get those things.
I don't know. It may be a teachable moment here.
I'll try.
Do that. Or you could have them go around and pick Japanese beetles.
Huh? I bet put them like to
that.
Work.
I bet they'd like that. That's good. Oh, and you tasted some interesting cheese lately.
Oh, right. So Kevin at Lost Lake Farm has, oh dear, can I remember? It's called, what are they called? One is his Camembert and the other one is his
Burnt oak.
Smoke. Burnt oak. There you go. Yep. So they're the same base, you know, the same inoculant, but they taste different, right? Mm-hmm. So Kevin was saying, Donna, how do I describe the differences? Because, you know, he's selling at the farmer's market, among other places, and people want to know, well, what's the difference between these two? Now, my favorite is the burnt oak. And what I had said to him the other day is I have to say that, of course, I've had a lot of really good cheese in my life, and I hope I will continue to do so. But there are none better than this burnt oak. It is really, really, really good. So we're very fortunate to have this. You know, it's made locally. It's and I think he's a very talented cheesemaker. And, of course, I've been out to the farm, and he has all of his own cows, and they're all grass-fed. And it's just, like, couldn't be more perfect. So the difference, I would say, I got some Camembert and the burnt oak, because usually I only buy the burnt oak because I love it. So these are soft rind cheeses, and they are best eaten at room temperature. So they kind of get a little soggy. You know, they're supposed to kind of crawl out of their skin a little bit. But to get the full flavor, you do that. So I did a side-by-side tasting. Now, Camembert it's so classically French. And not everyone loves it. You know, you have to really like Camembert. It has its own peculiar cheesy flavors. And Kevin's is very, very good. And I like it. However, adding the ash. So it's basically charcoal. Now, what the charcoal does is it changes the process of the bacterial change.
Huh.
And because it's alkaline, it makes for a slightly sweeter cheese. Not sweet, it's in no way sweet, but less. I would say on an American palate, it's probably more friendly than a Camembert. So it has more freshy, cheesy flavors, and I think it's, I don't know, what do I want to say, rounder in your mouth? But because, so that it's a class, Morbier has done the same way. There's a wonderful, what's it called, Humboldt Fog from California that has this, so it's like has a black line in the middle of the cheese, and it's very traditional. And like originally it started because the Camembert makers would make a Camembert in a two-day process. So they would put the ash in the middle between one layer and the next day to keep it from spoiling. So I highly recommend the Lost Lake Farm burnt oak. Yes.
Oh, those are some good words about cheese. Thank you, Donna. Good. Okay. So it's State Fair time. August 9th through 19th. And there's lots of things to do at the State Fair, including, guess what? They're doing one, too. They're doing a farm-to-fair sit-down Sunday dinner.
Oh, my. This is the year for the farm-to-table.
Oh, they said they're going to have a 500-foot-long table on the Grand Concourse. And then you can kind of do that. And there's lots of other stuff, including 200 food stands, not new ones, and 75 items on a stick. So there's lots to explore.
Well, let's hope at their farm to table they don't serve the items on the stick.
Oh, maybe they will. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe six courses of deep-fried everything.
On the stick. On the stick. Well, so there's a good chance to sit down and eat with a farmer, eat with your friends there, too. And more coming up. KHOI's 6th birthday party is Sunday. This coming Sunday starts at 4 o'clock with music, with cake, and T-shirt printing. Bring a T-shirt and get yourself printed up there. That's good. That's good. You've been listening to the Donalana Kitchen. Today we talked with Chef Steve Heller about the farm-to-table dinner. And things from the garden, too. Lots of good food things, including ice cream, yes. Music today by the Barn Owl Band. Join us here every Tuesday at noon, repeated at 7 p.m. or anytime on khoafm.org. You can download us with your device. Yes, yes. Check out great local programming on this station. There's good things for your ears. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prishkintas.
We've had engineering today by Evan Taylor. Eat good food and enjoy life.